Minute 3 of the Great Escape Minute, the daily podcast where we dig into the Great Escape 1 minute at a time. I'm Tom.
And I'm Rob.
Today we're talking about Minute 3. Minute 3 starts with the disclaimer that this is based on a true story and ends with some German motorcycles parking. So, like I said, we get this disclaimer.
This is a true story. Although the characters are composites of real men, and time and place have been compressed, every detail of the escape is the way it really happened. I actually have a lot to say about this fact. Again, this wasn't something that was done so much at the time that this movie was made in the 60s. To take a block and, I mean, the story is still relatively fresh in people's minds. The movie came out 19 years after the events. A lot of the people who survived the story and their family members are around. So they have to be very careful with what they're doing and what they're saying. So to put a disclaimer in within right at the beginning of the third minute says a lot. It basically says, okay, we don't want to piss anyone off here. What we're trying to do is we know that this was a great event and it's a great story to tell. We're going to tell it a little differently than it really happened. But what we're going to do is we're going to try to stay as true as possible. But at the same time, we're not going to use the real people. We're going to be changing the time and places and things like that so that as you mentioned yesterday, when you read the book, that a lot of this planning took months and months of all these prisoners getting together and figuring out how to do things. But in this, in the movie, they compress the time and it makes things a lot more effective. From that perspective, the fact is, though, and they want us to know that even though we're watching a fictional account of the story, basically they tried as hard as possible to stay as true to what really happened the entire time. And I think that's a very bold statement to make, especially at this time, because like I said, people are still alive who were directly affected by it. The repercussions of the events of this movie, which I'm sure most people who are listening to this have already seen the movie, but we'll try to keep it somewhat spoiler free. But the bottom line is that a lot of people are connected to the events that happened here, and they just want to be as careful as possible here. So I think it says a lot that they're able to put this right at the beginning of the movie. You know, nowadays you'll have one little line saying this is based on a true story, or they'll actually say this is a true story, or you'll have it just in the end credits. Basically, telling us what happened to some of the characters or whatever it is. But again, to do this so early in the movie and have it as a full, the full text, it stays on screen for obviously enough seconds because you have to be able to sit and read it. And, you still have the events going on behind it. They're actually the convoy actually reaches their destination. The text stays on screen for 20 seconds until the convoy actually gets to the camp itself. And, once again, it's really interesting to watch that the credits are rolling, but something is still going on in the background. You have this entire convoy moving along and you have all these trucks and stuff like that. So, I found it to be quite interesting that they chose to do it this way.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. It's like you're saying, nowadays you might get based on a true story, and what that means very much will fluctuate depending on who wrote the movie. And you get a movie like The Blind Side where it's like, this guy actually exists and he's a professional football player, but very little of his childhood is depicted anything like, it actually was. And then, you get the opposite end where you get basically dramatized documentaries. And this one falls, in my opinion, a little closer to that side. Obviously, it's not a documentary. There's plenty of those about this out there. But it gives you that nice, dramatization of what happened while still doing what it can to hold true to the story while still being entertaining.
Correct. I mean, they do a great job of it. And also, when you watch this minute visually, it shows the contrast because they come from the lush, Bavarian countryside, and then you get to an area which is filled with sand. It definitely is very different from the forest around it. You have all these tall evergreen trees around, you know, around the camp. But the camp itself, you have, you know, it's all grayish beige, the way that it looks. Right. And this is also the first time that we get a chance to actually see the layout of the camp, or at least part of the layout of the camp. What's interesting is that you can see that there are a number of huts that is basically the German offices, which we'll see through the course of the movie also, but how it's situated away from the gates. You know, there's a little bit of a distance, which obviously makes sense. Yeah, so in this minute, you see the convoy arrive at the camp. You get to see the number of guard towers, the way that those are all situated also. You get to see some of the huts of where the prisoners are going to be kept, just to give us a general visual layout of everything that's going on here. And then you slowly see that the cars, each of them stop, and they stop in different places also, which is also very telling. And what's interesting is someone who's seen this movie before, you know, you look at who gets out of some of these cars. It's very interesting because, you know, they show one of the staff cars. You have a German open the door, and out comes two of the British officers, which someone who hasn't seen this movie before wouldn't be able to recognize who they are. I mean, basically, you have Ramsay and MacDonald, you know, come out. Ramsay, because of the fact that he's the SBO, senior British officer in the camp. So he obviously gets some privileges and doesn't have to be cramped in the trucks that we see go by also. What was interesting to me is that MacDonald was the one who was with him, because throughout the movie, MacDonald is always with Big X. You know, you see him with Ramsay, but here it makes it seem as if he's his right-hand man.
Right.
Which is never quite mentioned throughout the course of the movie, you know, the connection between the two of them. But I think this, just seeing the two of them get out of the car together says that the two of them definitely have a strong connection, whether it's just a military connection, or possibly it could be that they have a friendly connection, you know, that they say to Ramsay, okay, you're going, and pick someone to go with you. And so he picks, you know, one of his comrades to go with him on there. It's also interesting watching the way that the German soldiers act in this. You have the German officers that look at Ramsay and MacDonald, and then they look away quickly. You know, just a quick glance. And then you have the motorcycles, they go off on one side of the gate. And then you have a troop carrier that shows up. If you actually count, there are 8 soldiers in that troop carrier were guarding all these prisoners. And then you have basically the convoy itself. You know, you have 2 motorcycles followed by 2 sidecar motorcycles, followed by 2 staff cars. Then you have a troop carrier, which is the one that I mentioned before, that has the 8 soldiers in it. And then you have a group of, I think, 5 or 6 of the trucks. And then you have motorcycles in between, and then you have the rest of the trucks. So I found it interesting to you know, they show you the type of defense that they try to have in this particular case. You know, just that, you know, you have 250 prisoners, but they're guarded by let's say 20, maybe 30 guards, but they're able to do it well.
Well, and I mean, just looking at the layout of the camp, I mean, it looks like a miniature version of a, you know, a normal military camp. You have, you know, some sort of perimeter set up. You know, it doesn't look to me like, I guess what I'm trying to say is, it doesn't look to me like a jail, you know, which I understand POWs is a little different, but whenever I think of a POW camp, it always makes me think of a jail type situation. And seeing this, it looks like it would be, you know, if you told me the Americans had something that looks like this in, you know, I lost my train of thought.
In Iraq, Iraq, Afghanistan,
right.
Saudi
it looks
Arabia.
Very similar to what is set up there. And I always thought that was interesting. And I did want to touch on, just go back just a hair, when you were talking about MacDonald. I've always kind of thought MacDonald was Ramsay's XO, executive officer. And I don't know if that's because they come out of the car together, or, I mean, we always kind of see Ramsay, MacDonald, and Big X together. And so I just always thought of McDonald as his XO, and that's why they're so, the three of them are so often together. I don't know what your thoughts on that. I don't know if you had any thoughts on that, Rob.
No, that's fine. That I can understand. Another thing I wanted to point out about the camp, the layout and everything like that. I mean, obviously this is mentioned a little bit later on, but it just looks completely brand new. It looks like they just, you know, cut down all the trees in the area and you know, decided to build this camp right there. Obviously the camp that they built in the movie where they actually did build a duplicate of the camp, you know, that was obviously new also. And later on we're actually going to be, hopefully talking with one or maybe even two people that have actually visited where they created the sets and even the places where this really took place. So that'll be interesting to hear their perspectives, what they think about the layout and how everything played out, you know, how they built, if they built the sets properly and did things right. Well, another thing I found very interesting here is also you see the group of soldiers that are waiting, you know, standing at attention. You have a group of soldiers waiting for all of these trucks to arrive, and basically you only have 10 soldiers that are sitting there waiting for them. I guess it comes from a military standpoint that if you, you know, if you have enough good and competent guards, you're able to hold 250 prisoners properly. I think this is also a good point for us to maybe discuss with everyone, tell everyone what our history is with this movie.
Yeah,
you know, why. Yeah, you can go.
Oh, well, I was gonna ask you if you wanted to delve into yours and also how this relates to some of your just movie history, if you wanted to get into that a little bit as well.
Okay, sure, no problem. I can do that. My stepfather used to love this movie, and he also loved The Bridge on the River Kwai, and he loved Stalag 17. Those were three of his favorite movies from when he was a teenager and when he was in his 20s and whatever. He always made sure that whenever it was on that we would watch these movies with him. And, you know, me being a movie fan from a very, very early age, whenever, you know, I had the chance to watch something new, I would watch it. And so this is one of the movies that I watched, and I loved it the first time I saw it. I can't even say how many times I've seen it over the years. I mean, the first time I saw it was in the mid-80s, so I must have been probably about 10, 12, something like that. I have a guesstimation that I've probably seen it 20 or 25 times over the years, something like that. I have no way of actually knowing because, you know, I only started keeping track of my movie watching years later, but it's definitely very high on that. I mean, on my website, I've already reviewed it 6 times in the last 8 years. You know, it's something that I try to watch at least once a year because it's a film that I enjoy so much. I actually also recall that at some point, I think I must have been around 16 or 17, I was visiting relatives. And, you know, I was there for a few days over the weekend, or maybe it was a week. I don't remember how long I was there for. And so I was a little bored. I didn't have anything to do. So I went through their videotapes, and one of the videotapes they had was a VHS version of this, which was it was on 2 cassettes, you know, back, you know, I'm sure a lot of people here listening can relate, you know, that back in the 80s when you have a movie that was 3 hours long. You know, most videotapes that were taped in, I think it was called SP, would only fit 2 hours. So you know, you finished it, and then you had to pop in the next video to continue it. You know, obviously today things are very different, especially, you know, with DVDs and Blu-rays and, you know, digital copies of movies and stuff like that. So that makes things much easier because you don't have to wait that little bit of time in between. So like I said, for me, this has always been one of my favorite movies. It's such a fun movie to watch. And, you know, the fact that I've seen it so many times, you know, I never get bored of it. And it's always fun catching new things in this movie. Yeah. So just remembered, I forgot yesterday when we were discussing this, I forgot to mention it. I actually read the book also by Paul Brickhill, back when I was probably about 17 or 18. I read the book and I remember enjoying it. Unfortunately, my copy somehow disappeared over the 30 years since then. So I haven't reread it then. Trying to track down a copy now so that while we're doing this at some point, I'll hopefully be able to read it and get a whole new perspective on the story. Why don't you tell everyone your history with this movie, Tom?
Oh, why don't we can go into that.
Or do you want to wait and do that tomorrow?
Yeah, let's do that tomorrow. Leave them wanting a little more. Leave them excited for what tomorrow brings. Did you have any other notes specific to this minute?
No. I think we got everything that I had marked down.
All right. Well, if you have a moment, please rate and review us on iTunes, Google, or wherever else you're getting your podcast from. If you want to contact us, our email address is thegreatminute@gmail.com. Our website is thegreatescapeminute.com. Our Twitter is @greatescapemxm. Or you can join our Facebook group. It's called The Cooler. And other than that, we will talk to you guys tomorrow.
Tally-ho.